Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Wednesday, December 15th, 2010. Tech News Today is brought to you by Ford and Voice Activated Sync, featuring true hands-free calling, turn-by-turn directions, 911 assist, and more. Available exclusively on Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury vehicles. And by Slingbox, which just turned your iPad into a television. Slingbox introduces their new iPad app just in time for the holidays. So now you can watch your home TV on your iPad anywhere you take it. Check it out at a Best Buy near you or slingbox.com. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Jason Howell.
Becky Worley off doing holiday coverage. Sarah Lane still recovering from jet lag from Loeb. And so we are very happy to have a couple of guests today returning to the show. Scott Johnson from CurrentGeek.com, MyExtraLife.com, FrogPants.com. I could be here all night.
Many dot coms, but we don't have to mention any of those. Most importantly, I'm just happy to be here, Tom. Thanks for having me for Tech News Today.
Thanks for coming back today. and for the first time on the show, I got to do This Week in Google with you last week. I had such a great time. Thanks for being on Tech News Today. Kevin Purdy from Lifehacker.com.
Hello.
Good to have you along today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Let's start out with a little controversy brewing around Amazon. Self-published author Selena Kitt was notified that the print version of one of her fiction books violated Amazon's content guidelines. And like a lot of times when you have these big tech companies, there wasn't a lot of specificity of why her book was removed. She was just referred to the terms of service. That could mean it could be anything. It could be copyright infringement. It could be some technical violation. But it turns out she found out a bunch of other authors who had erotic themes in their book involving incest had also been removed from Amazon. And this is becoming a controversy, not because everyone thinks that incest is a great thing to write about, but because, as Selena puts it, I don't believe in incest. I was just writing a novel. It was fiction, and this was part of the book. I don't believe in it or support it any more than mystery writers support murdering people. They just write about them. What do you guys think? Does Amazon have the right to just pull anything they want? It's their store, right?
I think it's pretty strange. Like you said, there's a wide range of, I'm assuming, writing about incest or whatnot, from, you know, romance novelists who just put it into a work as opposed to writing an entire book advocating it. I think it would be funny if Amazon had been very specific in their terms of service and then that itself became like titillating. You know, like they described very specifically what you can't put in a novel. People get very, you know, like, oh, really?
Oh, and you can't put that? Oh, and yes. You can't put that?
No bare-chested horseback riders, no, et cetera. It's a strange call.
The weird thing about it to me is this, you know, like with this new Mark Twain autobiography that's out now and everybody's kind of flipping out over it, and it's renewed a bunch of talk about why certain schools and a lot of charter schools still don't allow Mark Twain's most important works in their schools because of the use of the N-word. And this argument that, well, you know, in the context it was used, he was actually someone who was very forward thinking about race and the idea of, you know, abolishing slavery and moving to a point where there was more equality. But yet people see the usage of the word alone as enough to sort of condemn the book. And this, to me, is again, that same slippery slope. Well, if you're going to pull this one book because of this one reference, where is that line? What if there's a book that talks about how to fight incest in a family or how to fight it socially, or are you going to give the same kind of trouble to them for having descriptions in their books that maybe more or less match the one in this fictitious book? That's where it gets sticky. And I don't know that I love Amazon making that choice for us.
For a brief period of time, some of these books were actually deleted from people's Kindles. You remember that there was a big kerfuffle about this with the book 1984 getting removed from people's Kindles at one point. Amazon has since responded to Ars Technica and said, due to a technical issue, for a short window of time, three books were not available for re-download by customers who had purchased them. when this was brought to their attention, they fixed the problem. Those books are available for redownload. So if you've bought one of the books that's been removed from the store, you can still redownload it. You still have access to it. Amazon did say that books violated Amazon's content guidelines, but they didn't get into any other specifics about that. So there was a Slashdot posting that pointed out that there was a bestseller in Kindle advertisement that in its story has a scene about incest in it. So I mean, this is tricky. Amazon is a publisher in this case, right? And they're also a bookstore. So they're allowing self-published authors to use them as a publishing house. A publisher has the right to say, I don't want to publish your book. But I think Amazon is being held to a higher standard by some people because they purport to be open to anyone and anything, and they're put in the place of having to censor, and they sort of have the right to do that.
Well, it's the same issue. Everybody does this. So they're curating a bookstore and a digital book service. So they're curating that in a way. They have this terms of service, and they felt for whatever reason, if it's incest related, that they're going to kick this lady out of their curated service. Apple does it with the App Store. There are many other examples of this. And you're always like, well, where is the line drawn? You're happy to give me 500 stupid apps about farting, but you won't let me have this one app about something that you may or may not be questionable. And it's the same here. And I just feel like they need to be able to protect themselves. What they don't want is 1,000 lawsuits saying Amazon is peddling, you know, smut and child pornography or whatever extreme they take it to. So I know they don't want that. But I feel like there's another medium somewhere where they can get to and find parity with authors and not have this be such a big deal. Because I guarantee you, if that's the reason that they pulled this, if you go through the library of Amazon Kindle available product, you're going to find a ton of stuff that either refers to incest or has some scene in it or some reference. And are those guys all just sitting around going, oh, crap, our book's about to get pulled? And how big is your book? Is that a huge bestseller on the New York Times? And that, therefore, it must be okay to go ahead and keep in the store. But small little independent author gets pulled simply because they don't have the clout to do anything about it. I don't like it. I don't like any of it.
All right, let's move on to the FBI surreptitiously placing a backdoor into OpenBSD, or at least that's the allegation from an email there was a report surfacing on an email list yesterday from a former government contractor who alleges he worked with the FBI to implement a number of backdoors in OpenBSD 10 years ago, and that his 10-year confidentiality agreement with the FBI has expired. This has set off a firestorm of controversy amongst the BSD community. A lot of people saying this can't possibly be true because we would have found it. Other people say he's full of it, that this never did happen. Other people thinking, well, wait a minute, if it's been in BSD for 10 years, could it have found its way into other products? Theo Durrott is the founder of BSD. He's the one who said he got the email from Perry. Brian Prophet over at itworld.com tried to track down one of the programmers named by Perry as being on the FBI payroll. He found two programmers with the same name and got denials from both of them, saying like, no, we had nothing to do with that. We've never been paid by the FBI. We've never been on the FBI payroll. So pretty murky here. Kevin, do you think that this is a real allegation?
It sounds like
it's a real allegation. Do you think it's right. a real thing?
It's amazing that it's like that Russian spy saga we just had, where the FBI would have to be pretty amazingly forward thinking to plant a programmer or, you know, pay off programmer at this one specific project and assume that it was going to pay off down the line. But it actually is used in Windows services for Unix and firewall sold by some commercial entities, too. So I was kind of surprised. I thought that OpenBSD had been kind of eclipsed by other projects. But I don't know. I hate to say it, but I would not be really surprised either way if it really did happen. Or if the FBI did at least attempt it, I wouldn't be surprised. I'd be surprised if, I don't know. That's the whole idea of open source, is that it's supposed to be, you know, peer-reviewed and such like that. So it would be kind of sad if it really did work.
Steve Gibson was saying on Security Now today, they went into this in detail, that you could actually not find something like this because of the nature of that programming, that you'd really have to be looking for it to stumble across it.
It would be so deep down in the code that you would not, a person just casually looking might not notice it.
Yeah, he's like, it's quite possible it could stick around for 10 years.
Wow.
So it's you know, it's not without, outside the realm of possibility. And my question is, why would, what gain would Perry have to make this allegation if it wasn't true? I don't even know whether it's true. I don't even think it's true, frankly, but why would he do it?
Well, it's a good question. One of the things that this strikes a little fear in me is that aren't there a lot of web servers? I won't say majority, but a fair number of web servers that hosts run that are running OpenBSD. I mean, that seems like that's it's still a kind of pervasive format for a lot of web stuff. And maybe this is just a paranoid something about people getting backdoor access to people's information. And I don't know. It seems like it's a weird allegation without having any kind of real concrete proof of anything at this point. It feels like a weird scare tactic, but there are a lot of servers. Unless things have changed in the last 3 years since I really was digging into hosting, most of the servers out there at the time when I was checking, you know, a few years ago, were all OpenBSD stuff. So maybe there's more fear there than, you know, than we realize, or there's more potential, I guess.
And people should note OS 10 is based on FreeBSD, based on Darwin, which is based on FreeBSD. So not the same as OpenBSD, although, hey, anything's possible, right?
Hey, whatever. It's all based on Next Step, Tom. What are you talking about?
There you go. We haven't heard any revelations about Next Step yet.
No. That's the next step.
Microsoft had a big event in San Francisco today, unveiling a whole slew of updates for Bing online mobile apps. The one getting the most attention is like annotations. So when you do a search on Bing, you will actually see if any of the results have been liked by your friends on Facebook, as long as you're logged into Facebook and logged into Bing, and it's all integrated there. Other local enhancements, OpenTable integrated into local search, Bing Maps get a bunch of improvements. Kevin, you were looking over this stuff. What's the stuff, what impressed you most as a former, as a occasional This Week in Google host? What is impressing you about Bing here?
The local implementation, lots of local and you know, geo coordinated stuff that's installed here now. They're almost, it's like kind of catching up to as much stuff as Google was doing about a year ago. Bing is such a usable service and such a pretty admirable for both having unique stuff and having a lot of the same kind of features that Google does, and sometimes even beyond. It just continues to be this story about how do you get people to change behavior that's so finely ingrained at this point. You know, I don't know. It'd be like opening a new shipping company or something. How do you get people to remember that there's another way you can send your packages these days?
Well, Tom, you were saying something about that before the show today in prep. You were talking about how Microsoft is often really good at being second. Like, they come in later and end up really impressing us and doing great things. What I don't know how you shift the zeitgeist away from Google. I really like Bing. I love their iPhone app. I think it's a good you know, search engine on the web. These new features are great. But there's something that just says to me, well, yeah, but you just use Google. It's fine. It's simple. And you don't have to have something new, learn something new. You still feel like you're part of, you know, what the web is using the most or whatever. And there's something to be said for that, I think.
It only takes 2 seconds for you to use Bing, find, not see a result you're used to seeing on Google and say, nope, back to Google. You know, it's hard to move.
It used to be a good strategy for Microsoft. Being behind Apple in the GUI worked great for them. Being behind Netscape in browsers worked great. They would kind of draft in on the innovations and then sort of pounce and tighten them up and leverage their market dominance to push their product into the forefront. That has not worked so well recently. That has not worked very well for Zune. We're still very early to tell, but it doesn't seem like Windows Phone 7 has really become out of the gate any more dominant than Windows Mobile was. So I think Bing is suffering from that same thing where, like you're describing, Kevin, people look at it and go, it's nice, it's great, I love it, but I use this other thing and I don't see the reason to switch.
And Microsoft's really,
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, Microsoft, like Google, they always say that the problem it has with social function and games and such like that is that when you think of Google, you don't think of talking to my friends and having fun. You think of finding something, clicking on it, and moving on. You don't think of Microsoft as this big, expansive company that has geniuses that can do everything from RSS readers to, you know, reverse image search, geodata, anything like that. You just think of Microsoft as the company that, you know, powers the back end of your work computer. So I don't know. It's hard to it's hard to imagine how they're going to turn people's minds around. With video games and Xbox and PS3, you know, a generation or two can make a big difference, but it seems like a long-haul game.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. The 360's market dominance in this market anyway, it's not so true around the rest of the world, and that's always varies every time there's a new generation. But they've been able to find a level of dominance in this country with the Xbox 360, and you might say, well, what's the difference there? What's changed? And part of it, I think, is they took an interesting second place and kind of fight with Nintendo a little bit, but an interesting second place spot last generation with the first Xbox. I think them sticking to it and innovating on top of what was already working and playing to the strengths of that platform really helped them secure that position. I think they can do that again. It's just that when you think of a search engine, you don't have that cycle. You don't have that 5 to 10 year rollover where, like, all right, brand new hardware coming out. Who wants to get it? There's no hype. There's no new games to talk about and new tech to talk about. It's simply web updates to a search engine. And that's a much harder sell, I think, over the long term.
All right, we're going to learn why people use monkey as a password later on the show. But first, I want to tell you about our first sponsor, Ford. And voice-activated sync, problem for a lot of folks these days while driving is keeping their eyes on the road, keeping their hands on the wheel. And Ford and voice-activated sync allow you to do both while still making phone calls, reading text messages, sending text messages, spending time looking for what you want to listen to in your playlist. You can do all of that with voice-activated sync, so all you do is talk to the car, and it responds to your voice, and it works really well. It's really good voice recognition. We're not talking about mangled, like you have to repeat yourself over and over. I've done it. You just say what you want and it reacts. True hands-free calling, turn by turn directions, 911 assist, and more. If you're in an accident, airbags deploy, it calls 911 for you. It's just a little good peace of mind there on top of everything else. It's available exclusively on Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury vehicles, and they are starting something called the Great— well, it's not called that. I call it great. The Great Ford Focus Test Drive Challenge. Ford wants to donate $10,000 to a charitable cause that you support. And so what they want you to do is submit a video now through December 31st, 2010, saying what charitable cause you would support and why if you're selected. They'll send you and a friend on a free trip to Madrid for a test drive at Spain's National Institute for Aerospace Technology. To learn more and submit a video entry, go to twitfordfocus.com, look at the other videos, get an idea, upload yours by December 31st, tell us what charitable cause you would like Ford to donate $10,000 to, and you could be on your way to Madrid to the National Aerospace Technology Institute, the National Institute for Aerospace Technology, to test drive a Twit Ford or a Ford Focus, and twitfordfocus.com is the address. There will not be a Twit-branded Ford Focus in Madrid.
Oh, that'd be great. That logo would look great on the hood, great big painted logo.
Awesome. Leo's got the twit.tv license plates. He had to add the dot nice. Himself, but it says twit.tv now.
Just like a marker? Is that how I did it?
I can't. I don't know if it was a sticker or a marker or what. Yeah, but he
added the love that.
I didn't know you could do that.
I don't know if you can either. He hasn't been pulled over yet.
I'm not going to try it in New York.
All right. Ars Technica has an article today revealing some interesting PowerPoint slides from DPI vendor Allot and billing company OpenNet on how to make more money off of your subscribers on your wireless network. One of the slides shows how instead of just allowing the people who use your phones to connect to Facebook, you could charge them 2 cents per megabyte to connect to Facebook. Or Skype, you could charge them €3 monthly to connect to Skype. 50 cents monthly to connect to YouTube. You can meter the crap out of people application by application with a little policy enforcement and deep packet inspection. And the slides make this out to be the savior of wireless networks. Is this what Google and Verizon were hoping for when they came to their net neutrality compromise, which essentially said hands off of wireless?
My God, well, I hope not.
Yeah, this is bad. This is really bad. I don't know who gets to stand up and do the right thing here, but I don't like this idea. This is getting planted in somebody's head, and they're going to mull on this and think of ways of doing it. Microtransactions are so easy on these platforms now, and buying in-game berries for your Smurf stupid game in the middle of your iPad, your two-year-old can do it if you're still logged in. I don't like this one bit. I do not want to be microcharged for how often I check Twitter. That will be the end of Twitter. basically.
Jeff Jarvis often says on This Week in Google, or I've heard him say before, that, you know, the internet really started to take off when AOL stopped charging per minute, per hour, and people could just, you know, flit and go anywhere they wanted to, and it didn't matter where, all bandwidth was equal, all the sites you visited, and this is just the absolute reverse of that. Does this company really think that Facebook wouldn't sue them into non-existence if they were charging 2 cents per megabit to access that? Or that does Skype really think that they're going to grow, you know, from having people be afraid to use Skype to have a long call with their mom overseas? It's amazing.
And frankly, I mean, I have the hope, and maybe I'm deluded here, but I have the hope that we actually have just a smattering enough competition in wireless that the users would say, well, that's crap. Why would I go to your company, even if you have the great phones, if I'm going to have to pay to use Facebook? I can go over here to Metro PCS or T-Mobile and access Facebook for free. Why the hell would I ever sign up for that plan when the rest of the internet is free for everyone else? Because, I mean, that's the idea, is that we have enough competition that you could never get away with this. But, you know, we are losing competition in wireless more and more every day. I also don't see Apple agreeing to this. I don't see the iPhone ever having this as part of the App Store.
Nor do I see Google getting excited about that on the Android perspective. And also, if somebody's asking me to go pay microtransactions for the thing I use, they're going to have to make an argument to me that says, this is going to be less on average per month for a data plan for you than you're currently paying for your iPhone to AT&T, or you're currently paying to Verizon or whatever. They would have to make a really strong argument that, you know, this is 25% of what you normally pay, because when it all comes down to it, you're not visiting these places all that much anyway, and we're only charging you these little bits when you do. And if you don't go at all, we don't charge you for the visits you would have had. That would have to be a super strong argument. And even then, I say, probably not. This scares me. There's too many weird precedents set by this.
The only way I think it makes sense as an appeal, if this really is being pitched to the wireless companies, the only way it would really be appealing was the same way that they've gotten us to pay for text messages all these years, which are literally free for them to transmit. They're like they're on the backbone of a regular phone call anyways. But we've shown them that we'll pay $5 a month for unlimited, 250 text messages. And they've just been laughing all this time at us for doing that. And this must just seem like improved text messages to them. Like, oh, you can just use, add a Facebook bundle to your package, or, add a,
Yeah. I couldn't put it any better myself.
I don't even know how to continue verbalizing it. I apologize.
That's all right. It leaves you speechless. It just does. I like the fact that one of the companies is named OpenNet sort of a Orwellian way. YouTube wants to buy Next New Networks. If you don't know Next New Networks, you might think of them as the people who brought us Obama Girl or the Bed Intruder song. They used to have Epic Foo as one of their properties at one time. They've since left. Channel Frederator, was that also, I think, Next New Networks? Anyway, New York Times reports that Google is interested in buying Next New Networks as a sort of addition to YouTube. This would be the largest content company that Google has ever dabbled in, wouldn't it, Kevin?
I imagine so. I mean, unless you considered YouTube a content company. But Next New Networks, user content, but Next New Networks, they don't really have a big profile right now among the average person. So if Google bought them, I don't know where it would fit in. I don't know where they would be, putting them, except for on YouTube, I suppose.
A lot of this stuff would just show, well, that's true, it's already there, but a lot of this would just show up as like, oh, okay, well, there's this new thing that's kind of, viral and people are into it, but it's just right there with all these other things that are happening that are viral and people are into already on YouTube. It doesn't fit. It's not like they bought Viacom. Heaven forbid that ever happened, but it's not like they did something like that and got some really great new content. Really what they're getting is just more potential viral. I would actually think of this as a bigger deal if they bought Funny or Die, for example, or College Humor or something like that, where they are, in major production of major stuff. And it's a cut above, say, just, Joe Blow's thing out of his garage. If that was true, I feel like those would be at least a bigger news splash. This feels just a little like, oh, okay, well, absorb that. But we were getting them on YouTube anyway.
I mean, does Not YouTube need deal. Originals? Sort of like, YouTube original programming that they provide? I don't see YouTube as a place for that, but maybe they're so frustrated with not being able to get broadcast companies to give them actual original programming to carry that's legal anyway, that they just want to make their own, and they figure buying a smaller web video company that they can then throw some money at might be the way to do that. I don't know.
Yeah, I just said the downside of it to me is. Oh, go ahead. I keep cutting you off. Stupid Skype. Sorry. Skype.
I don't know that you lure in the big companies by showing them even more, you know, bikini videos and such. Like, I don't know. I'm sorry. I don't know that much about Next New Networks. But
the story we're looking at from CNET has the Obama girl video, so it makes it look like that's all they do. But they have a ton of different shows.
Right. But yeah, I mean, there are millions and millions of people creating content and sometimes hitting big with it, sometimes not. I mean, the guys behind the team behind Auto-Tune the News, for instance, they're like a factory of, you know, viral videos at this point, and they really don't need to be bought by Google to keep doing that.
Yeah, they can just keep it up. I just feel like YouTube missed the boat on things like why do I have a Hulu player and a Netflix player on every device in the house, including portable stuff and my TV and my PS3s and my computers and everything else. There should be some kind of YouTube channel that has content contracts with real networks and people who are really making this stuff, not real networks like real networks. But you know what I mean? Like good
Windows
stuff.
Media
I
should be able player. To get
exactly. I should be able to watch the latest Modern Family on YouTube because they've got the biggest reach. They've got the most money. I've never understood why we haven't seen more of that from those guys.
Google should just buy Joss Whedon. I agree. Who said that in the chat?
Perfect.
At Nivon. Perfect. They just said, give Joss Whedon a bunch of money to make cool stuff and put it up on YouTube. I think that would be a better use of their...
Firefly Season 2, Episode 1 is all I'm saying right there.
Are you kidding me? Killer.
Mm-hmm.
Killer. You hear that? YouTube free idea from At Nivon in the chat room. All right. A couple more discussions to have before we get to news views. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals has upheld a previous ruling that if you bought and played World of Warcraft, you don't have the right to modify it anytime you want. This regards the makers of a mod called Glider that would play Warcraft for you automatically and get you through the lower levels fast, make you some gold in the process. This was against the terms of the license. So Blizzard shut it down. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, it's an interesting decision, said this falls under the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, and we're going to find that Glider violates the terms of use. You don't own your software. Blizzard does. And so Blizzard has the right to enforce their terms of use and say you can't use Glider. You can't mod the program any way you want. However, they didn't find it to be a copyright violation, oddly enough. And they said, we don't want to do that because then any software could say that any use you make is a copyright violation. And they don't think that's the way the Copyright Act is supposed to be interpreted. So I'm setting aside for a moment whether you thought it was okay to use Glider to cheat in Warcraft, because that's an ethical conversation. Scott, what do you think of this idea that you don't own your software? You're just licensing it from Blizzard.
Well, Tom, I hold in my hands the World of Warcraft Cataclysm Collector's Edition, and while I'm looking at it here, I'm trying to think to myself, what does it mean, the idea that I paid for this in the way that I would
the book, and you own the box,
right.
And you own the comics, and the
I sort
DVD
of own the DVD,
and the CD, but you don't own the software.
Right, and there's even arguments whether the DVD and the CD are mine to copy for myself or not, but aside from that... I did buy all that. That's true. But what I really wanted this for was the game. That's what I really care about. That's the reason these other things are more valuable to me. If the idea is that I just essentially went to a TV rental store and I rented the TV and now I'm paying monthly to get content on that TV to the same company who rents me the TV, there's something about that I really don't like the taste of. But I also think it's, you know, Blizzard's done the thing that isn't being talked about in this article or even in this whole issue is Blizzard has done things with this game that have changed the foundation of World of Warcraft so that Glider works kind of crappy now. Like all the phasing,
the
all
anyway.
The other stuff.
They didn't need the circuit appeals court.
Yeah, it kind of busted that, it.
I love the idea that because when courts are, you know, make decisions, they go back over previous decisions and reference them and stuff like that. So I love the idea that someday some judge is going to be looking down at this and, you know, and talking about copyright and EULAs and stuff. And he's going to say, well, as we saw in, you know, the orcs who are gathering the gold, they are an actual property. And the elves that are hunting, like, I just love the idea that this very specific geeky game is going to create all this amazing, you know, prior rulings on copyright.
Yeah, years down the road, orcs and yes. night elves will be the things of law.
I would call to the court's attention the night elf decision in 2010.
Yeah. We call it the night elf principle. Night elf fascia. All right, man. Finally, Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg named Time's Person of the Year. At the same time, Facebook won the title of Best Place to Work, according to Glassdoor.com's list of top employers based on staff feedback. So good day for the Facebook, eh?
Yeah, it's not bad. I'm looking at this list in its entirety. Number 9 is Overstock.com. I just wanted to mention this one because they're local here, and I have friends who work there that absolutely hate the place. So I'm trying to figure out how they ended up number 9 or who they're actually asking for this. But assuming that it's accurate, way to go, Facebook. Way over companies we normally see up there like Google and Apple and others. That's awesome.
To be fair, though, Glassdoor.com is an online site where you register anonymously and you talk about your company. You rate everything about it. So it's kind of self-selecting of companies that have employees who would know what Glassdoor is, go online and know to share this kind of information.
It's not scientific is what you're saying.
Well, just the companies that are going to be on that list are going to be the kind of companies that have lots of young online people. So, you know, that's why, I don't know, you're not seeing QVC on there.
You're not seeing USX.
Yeah. The Time magazine nod, I saw a tweet earlier that said it's really funny how, you know, print media is dead. Print media is dead up until they name something in the digital realm and then everyone freaks out.
Well, Time.
And now they all of a sudden, Time has this huge,
yeah. You know, do you think Zuckerberg's the? You were saying that you're kind of exhausted from having the conversation with other folks today about whether Julian Assange should have been named Time Man of the Year.
I mean, because there are times, you know, over the years they've named people who are not great. You know, they've named dictators and people who have killed people as people of the year. It's not, you know, greatest
it's not
person of the
honorific.
Year. It's person of the year. It's yeah, right. It's not honorific. So I definitely think by that standard that Julian Assange has done more to open questions in democracy and such and such. And there are people who are saying that Mark Zuckerberg, they picked this 5 years too late. I don't know that that's necessarily true. They've certainly been growing ever since. But
this is the year that Facebook really came into the massive awareness where your grandma knows about it and your kids and the people down the block. And there was a movie made about the guy. I think that's probably the reasoning there.
Yeah, right. you name it the year that there's a movie, and that movie was well received and critically acclaimed, and looks like it's going to, you know, have a fairly big Oscar presence, and all that kind of stuff. I think feeds into this, but there's no way you can look at Assange and not go that, you know that he is the most talked about, most influential dude at least in the last 6 months, if not this whole year. So I think it's a weird. I mean, it's not like it's a miscarriage of justice. It's Time magazine. It's a thing they do. You know, we all kind of take it sort of semi-seriously. But
yeah.
I remember when the internet was the man of the year, whatever, person
you,
of the year.
Yeah, Earth you. Got planet of the year. Oh, right, when yeah. you won.
You with a mirror on the cover.
Whatever it was of the year.
Yeah, that's right.
You.
And Hitler was a man of the 20th century, I believe,
yeah.
if I remember right. Because he had the biggest, I mean, he started the biggest war of the whole decade, or of the century.
He's an influential
individual. There's no question about it.
They'll make Godwin's Law. We're done with this conversation. They'll make a Julian Assange movie, and then he'll win Time Man of the Year.
Yeah.
That'll happen. That's my prediction for 2011. All right, this episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Slingbox. Just in time for the holidays, Slingbox is introducing the iPad app. If you don't know about Slingbox, it lets you get your TV anywhere you got an internet connection. So when I say get your TV, whatever your service is at home, whether it's over the air, cable, satellite, whatever you get on your television, you hook up a Slingbox to your internet and to your television service, and then you can watch on your iPad or on your laptop or on your BlackBerry, on your Android. You can watch your home TV now on your iPad anywhere you take it. Slingbox is a great holiday gift. You can find Slingbox or see a demo at Best Buy, or check it out at slingbox.com. Slingbox and your home TV now appearing on iPads everywhere. Time for the news fuse. Oh, the news fuse got
wow,
damp.
It totally got fizzled.
Yeah.
Oh, and green screen.
Who left the news fuse out in the rain?
It sounded like a car trying to turn over. That was great.
That was planned. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yahoo confirmed today that it laid off 600 employees. That's about 4% of their workforce. Area companies like TwoCows.com, DirecTV, and several others posted Twitter messages expressing interest in hiring former Yahoo employees, particularly. So the talent hunt is on. Also, the Tide House Brewery in San Francisco is offering free beer to any Yahoo employee or former Yahoo employee who brings in their severance papers. Free beer for forgers.
Oh, man. Two cows is my Palm Pilot days. Anyway, a Greek designer named Alex Tapiens. Am I saying that right?
Tapaneris? Yeah.
You know how I am with names. Whose name appeared on the PDF press release circulated by online troublemakers Anonymous has had his website disappeared. What? Has had his website disappeared and may or may not have been arrested. The UK website ThinkQ managed to talk to Alex on the phone, and while he wouldn't confirm his arrest on that call.
He wouldn't confirm his arrest. He says he's freaked out.
Oh, he's all okay.
That paragraph should have said had I finished.
All right. I blame Tom.
The following statement does not represent the views of Kevin Purdy at all. A Verizon iPhone in 2011 may not add much to Apple's overall sales. Piper Jaffray analyst Gene Munster advises, most of the early adopters of a Verizon iPhone will be people switching from AT&T. Munster expects Verizon will add around 2.5 million iPhones on its own next year, but cannibalize about 6.5 million from AT&T. In this scenario, Apple would likely sell a total of 20 million iPhones.
Do you disagree with Munster, huh?
Really? Because...
Gene Munster's never been wrong.
To say it will cannibalize AT&T, there are so many people waiting to go to Verizon.
I know.
It's like the thesis of every TechCrunch story ever.
We should have put this up in the discussion area. 19-year-old Lamar Johnson of Wolverhampton, England, has admitted to being involved in a £500,000 fraud in which he used stolen credit card details to buy his own songs on iTunes and Amazon. He was part of a group who allegedly downloaded the song 6,000 times in 2008 and 2009. Johnson admitted being responsible for about 2,000 of those 6,000.
Go Wolverhampton.
Rovers. China. Go Rovers.
I love that name. China launched a state-sponsored Twitter-like service called Red Microblog on Wednesday. Oh, man. The first step in a plan for local governments to master new media. One of the first posts, here it is. Quote, I really like the words by my chairman Mao Zedong. That world is ours. We should work together. Other posts contain similarly party line cheering. That kind of stuff just gives me the willies, dude. State-sponsored Twitter posts.
I'm sorry, Wolverhampton are Wanderers, not Rovers.
Oh, well, go Wanderers.
Settled. Remember that Forrester Research report we previously mentioned? That the internet and TV usage are tiered now? Not so fast, internet cheerleaders. In the first quarter of 2010...
Should have said tied, by the way. This is what happened when we lose the internet for like a half hour before I have to do the show. There. Oh. Now I fixed it.
I'm sorry. Internet and TV usage are tied, as in paired equal. Not so fast, internet cheerleaders. In the first quarter of 2010, Nielsen clocked weekly usage at 38 hours and 44 minutes, nearly three times what Forrester found. Over the same time frame, ComScore's account of internet usage was 7 hours and 24 minutes, about half of what Forrester found for TV usage.
So take that, Forrester Research. Also, I guess ESPN is having a meeting with Forrester to give them a talking to. About that report.
Stern talking to
you. Yeah. Google TV got its first software update today with a much-needed update to the horribly outdated Netflix app. It was like Netflix before there was a Netflix app. It was awful. But now you have the ability to do all the things in a modern Netflix app. They also got the ability to move and resize video displays while surfing the web, a movie results page that helps users find out which services are offering films, and finally the launch of a remote control app for Android-based devices.
Hey, how about a new app for the iPad? That thing is so janky. Anyway, the crazy madmen at Google. Crazy madmen fired a week's worth of Nexus S's into the Earth's atmosphere, hoping to test both the durability and the information gathering skills of the onboard compass, gyro, and accelerometer, while dedicated GPS models were installed in each to help recover the cargo. So far, only 6 of the phones have been recovered. So both Yahoo and Google doing some firing today.
Yeah. Hey, I see what you did there.
Nokia Siemens is touting that the specifications for long-term HSPA evolution have just been submitted to the 3GPP, promising theoretical speeds in excess of 650 megs per second, a number that still falls shy of the ITU's definition of 4G standard, but easily eclipses just about anything shy of LTE Advanced or WiMAX 2. That was tough copy to get through. T-Mobile USA is specifically mentioned in Nokia Siemens press release as supporting the developments.
This is the worst news fuse I've ever written, by the way. This was not fair to Kevin or Scott.
Does this finally sew it up, what we know was 4G, Tom? Does this give us a definition?
No, there is a definition, and nobody's met it yet.
Right, that's what I mean.
And this is T-Mobile essentially taking 3G and milking it as far as it possibly can and calling it 4G at the same time.
Nice.
All right. By the way, Twitter raised $200 million at $3.7 billion valuation, according to a report from All Things D. So they're going to be swimming in money. And they've also awarded the first ever golden tweet to Stephen Colbert for having the most retweeted Twitter posting all year long. Drake and Lil Wayne were right on his heels. But Colbert received the golden tweet award yesterday on his show, The Colbert Report.
In honor of oil-soaked birds, tweets are now gurgles. Was the number one most retweeted tweet in 2010. It's official. I won Twitter. I have harpooned the fail.
He harpooned the fail whale. And then Biz Stone came out and granted him the golden tweet award.
Awesome. And he said, that's pretty cool.
And he asked if it would obtain him lady friends, too.
Yeah, he asked if it would get him laid, and Biz Stone... Oh. What did Biz Stone say?
I don't remember.
Yeah, I don't remember what he said either, which is probably means no. All right. With that, we move to the calendar. Metro PCS adding 4G, well, LTE service anyway, as we just discussed, not actually 4G, in New York and Boston. So Metro PCS right up there with Verizon, at least in those markets. Google delays their decision on local fiber networks. So all those little towns around the United States who changed their name to Google for a day and all that stuff have to wait until early 2011 to find out if they're going to get a Google paid for fiber network. TELUS up in Canada is bundling free Xbox 360s with every Windows Phone 7 activation for a limited time, at least that's according to a leak reported on Engadget. That would be nice.
Yeah, no kidding.
Good way to boost the Windows Phone 7 sales, that's for sure. Windows Phone 7 also said to be getting a major update, codenamed Mango, in August or September of 2011. And this will include HTML5 and Silverlight support. Dell Streaks.
I was just going to say, I noticed the foodie sort of names coming out of both Android and Windows for their phone updates.
Well, Android's always been food based, right, Kevin?
Yeah.
Ever since Cupcake, at least. Mm-hmm. Donut, Eclair, Froyo, Gingerbread, Honeycomb.
What was A and B? Do you know? I don't know.
No idea. Apple pie, you would hope.
Apple pie and
and burger.
Blanc-mange.
Oh, no, that doesn't work.
Burger. Codename Burger.
Dell Streak is now $100 on contract at Best Buy here in the United States, and we are going to be announcing on Friday the folks who will be on our open mic episode. This is a special holiday episode we'll pre-record to run during the holiday week when we're off, and it will feature members of the audience. So we're going through right now and picking those folks. And it's not too late to send best of still, right?
No, absolutely not. Nor is it really too late to submit if you're interested in doing the open mic as well. Go to twit.tv/bestof for the best of submissions, bit.ly/TNT Holiday 2010 if you want to be a part of open mic.
All right, we were going to play a couple of video messages, but today's show is a disaster.
It's plagued. Neither video is playing.
One of them was removed by the user, so we can't ask your question about Chrome OS if you remove your YouTube video. And the other is
played upstairs.
The one I was promising would explain why monkey was a password. Yes. And now it won't play. But Joe sent us a link to a video and essentially said that he has worked with a lot of techs from India who use monkey as a password quite often. That is just a very popular thing with IT folks from India.
Interesting. Yeah. Never would have guessed.
So there you go. Thanks, Joe.
Maybe I'll put that in the downloadable version, just so that it gets in there.
Yeah, well, if you're watching the downloadable version, you're like, what's the big deal? Well, here's the video.
Hey, Tech News Today. Colin, I just want to let you guys know a couple things. The monkey password issue. In my line of work, mostly help desk stuff, I've been privileged enough to work with a lot of Indian techs from India. And for some reason, they used monkey a lot as a password. Monkey.whatever, monkey.java. I don't know why, but that's just a very common password I see with them a lot.
Okay, there's the space for the video in the download.
Perfect.
Danish broadsheet newspaper Politiken decided that they, too, for the sake of freedom of speech, wished to mirror WikiLeaks. According to our user, HateBadDesign, sent this to us by email. Turns out that they bought the space to host their WikiLeaks mirror on Amazon, and Amazon hasn't discovered it yet. So, shh, don't tell Amazon, but they're hosting WikiLeaks again. Or, depending on your perspective, something's rotten in Denmark.
Yeah.
Because it's Danish newspaper.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Yep.
Danish sounds very nice. Moving on to an email from Gilmore. I'm going to say that Tom screwed that up, too. Guillermo Castro.
I didn't screw that one up.
All right. It says, Tom, I was listening to the podcast from Friday where you mentioned that movie studios are experimenting to combat piracy. And you mentioned that they would start naming movies after common search terms. Well, funny you mentioned that, because there is a movie coming out in April 2001 called Source Code. At first, I thought it was a dumb name for a movie, but now I'm sure it's part of their evil plan to make the movie unsearchable for download. What do you think about that?
Well, I'm excited to see that movie, Source Code.
Yeah, it looks cool. It's the director, and his name's left me, but is the director of Moon. He is also the son of... famous singer guy that I can't think of right now.
David Bowie.
Yeah, David Bowie's the guy I meant. I almost said Vicky Stardust, but that's nobody's name.
That's Ziggy Stardust's sister who never felt it.
Right. But I loved Moon. I thought Moon was awesome.
Moon was fantastic.
Very excited to see what he does here. It looks great.
All right, a couple more emails to finish this up. Daniel said, an active duty U.S. Air Force person, as an active duty U.S. Air Force person, he can assure us that the New York Times et al., which we mentioned are blocked USAF computers now, he says, they are by no means the most ridiculous blocks we encounter on a daily basis. Some days it seems like our network admin slogan is, if you can do your job, we're not doing ours. Hooray for smartphones, which we also mentioned will be given to military personnel, that can give us the info we need. Thanks for that, Daniel. Boy, we got a lot of IT people in the audience, so be careful making fun of IT people there.
Ben Steele writes in to say, dear TNT people, I was watching your show 137, and I wanted to make the point that storing in the cloud can be entirely safe if end-to-end encryption is used like they do in LastPass. LastPass cannot decrypt a user's password database and hand it over to the feds, even if they were ordered to, because they do not know the encryption key. And he mentions that Security Now went over it in a lot of detail in their show about LastPass.
This is in response to Richard Stallman saying you should never store anything in the cloud because it's insecure and the government could come in and grab your data whenever you want.
Good week to get into LastPass.
Yeah.
For no particular reason.
For no particular reason. You use LastPass, mm-hmm. Do you?
I do. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah. I am still using 1Password and LastPass, and sometimes they fight. So I need to pick a side.
Well, that's kind of the big issue, right? If a new innovative password management system comes out, you have to migrate, and it's a huge pain.
Yeah.
LastPass makes it really easy to go into it. They can grab from all kinds of apps. So.
Yeah, that's true. They did grab my passwords out of 1Password fairly easily. I just need to get a 1Password. There's a little difference in the way they work is the issue. And so I've yet to make the final transition. But I could go on about that all night. We're out of time. We're well out of time. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Kevin Purdy, let folks know where they can find your work online.
I am at lifehacker.com. I'm a contributing editor, and I'm also the author of The Complete Android Guide, which is at completeandroidguide.com.
And Scott Johnson, purveyor of fine podcasts everywhere. We had a wow story today. Maybe you want to promote The Instance? I don't know.
Yeah, why not? Have people head over to theinstance.net. We just put up a brand new show, our post-cataclysm show with myself and my co-host Randy Jordan. We talk all about the wake of destruction of Cataclysm, the expansion, and whether or not you truly own that game you bought. So go check it out. It's theinstance.net, or you can find us on iTunes.
That's it for us. You can find us on the web at twit.tv. Follow us live every day at around 5:30 or 6 Eastern, 2:30 or 3 Pacific at live.twit.tv. Email us tnt at twit.tv or send us a video, a link to your uploaded video, tnt at twit.tv. And give us a call. Our phone number, Google Voice number 260-TNT Show. We'll see you tomorrow.